welcome to VBAC Birth Stories, a podcast where Australians share their journey to a vaginal birth after cesarean.
We are a safe haven for women to share their own VBAC journeys and through these personal experiences, educate and empower listeners.
I'm your host, Mel.
And I'm your host, Steph. And this is VBAC Birth Stories.
Hi, everyone. In today's episode, we speak with Andrea, who had a planned cesarean with her first baby, Ruby, due to a condition known as gastroschisis, where her intestines were growing outside of her body while in utero. Successful life-saving surgery was performed on her newborn immediately following her cesarean. 6 years later, Andrea fell pregnant with Patrick and returned to a public hospital setting armed with knowledge and research to have a successful unmedicated VBAC water birth. Listen to how Andrea prepared for the birth she sought to achieve, despite facing some resistance from the hospital, which had a policy of no water births for VBAC. So thanks, Andrea, for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Could we start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, my name is Andrea. I'm 36. I live in the Lower Blue Mountains. I have a partner, Andy, and a 7-year-old daughter, Ruby, and a 9-month-old son, Patrick. And I am a social worker and I work part-time. I've just returned from 9 months of maternity leave and I work in a hospital.
So did you want to start just by telling us about maybe your first birth, first pregnancy and how that all went?
In 2012, I was pregnant and was very excited about my first baby and went and did some research because I was really keen on the type of pregnancy and birth and everything, breastfeeding, and I had all these ideas. And just because of things my mum had told me, she had a very difficult birth, so I wanted to sort of plan, and I had booked myself in very early to do calm birth. Yeah, I was sort of planning all these things, but I ended up developing hyperemesis gravidarum, so extreme vomiting and nausea in pregnancy, so that wasn't the pregnancy I planned. But then at my 12-week ultrasound, we went in and I was told that the baby had gastroschisis, which meant she would be born with her intestines on the outside of her body. So it was all planned from the 12-week ultrasound. I knew I was having a cesarean and I had to go in very regularly for checkups because babies with gastroschisis don't grow properly in the womb. They're very small. So I had to make sure she was growing. So it was a very planned, structured sort of pregnancy and birth, I guess. Yeah.
And at the 12-week mark, when you discovered that, what was going through your mind at that stage, and do you think it had an effect on your headspace for the rest of the pregnancy, for the rest of that 9 months?
Yeah, I guess the first thought was, oh, is my baby okay? Is my baby, you know, going to be okay? Because the doctor did explain that some babies don't make it to term with that condition. And even if they are born okay, then during, you know, the surgery, they couldn't tell me how the baby would be. And I knew I had a long sort of journey ahead. So that was really scary. And then I guess I had a little bit of time to grieve the birth that I thought I, you know, might have had, that I knew, you know, a natural birth. I never wanted to have a cesarean birth. And yeah, I guess those sorts of things I had to deal with in the pregnancy. But I was so grateful that we live in a time where they could pick up on that, you know, had my daughter been born in a time where ultrasounds didn't exist, you know, she would have died, I might have died, it would have been you know, you can imagine the shock of giving birth to a baby with their intestines on the outside and not knowing that that's going to happen. So I was very, very grateful that we live in a time where she could survive that. And it, yeah, so in the end, it was okay because I had so much attention from doctors, more than most women normally would. So I got checked on all the time. The baby was checked. I had so many, you know, what are they called when they put the thing on your tummy?
The continuous fetal monitoring.
Yes, I had lots of those. So I heard her heartbeat, you know, all the time. And so it was sort of nice to have that as well. But it was sort of a mixture of the scary and, yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, before you were talking about a mother had sort of stressed to you that she'd had a difficult birth. So what were your preconceptions about birth before you fell pregnant, or as you fell pregnant? What did you have in your mind?
So none of my friends had had babies yet when I fell pregnant. I was sort of, I didn't really know of anybody in my family or friends other than my mum. So my mum had had my brother, and she had described it as an awful, traumatic natural birth. Then she had a stillbirth, which she said was really, really awful again. And then when she fell pregnant with me, she decided that she was having a cesarean because she didn't want to go through what she went through for the first two. And she and my dad really wanted me to have a cesarean because of that experience. And I told them, no, I don't want to have a cesarean. I had to have one in the end. I guess you said, what were my preconceived ideas? I knew there was a lot of fear from my mum, but I also knew that it was based on just her experience, that it wasn't, not because of anyone I knew, but I just had done a lot of reading and I was part of all these Facebook groups and, yeah. Mm.
With regards to Ruby's birth, how did the cesarean go? Did you have it booked in for what week did you know that you were going to have the cesarean?
So they told me, the obstetrician explained to me that they didn't want Ruby to be premature because then it would come with complications of being premature, but they also didn't want me to go into labor, so they had to sort of pick a time where hopefully I wouldn't go into labor and she wouldn't be preemie. So we chose 37 weeks as the time, I guess. So I was booked in pretty much exactly spot on 37 weeks. Yeah, that's when it went to plan. Yeah, I had an epidural, and it all, there was nothing.
Were you nervous on the day of the surgery when you were going in?
I was very much looking forward to not being pregnant again, and like pregnant anymore, because I had a horrible pregnancy. I was sick of throwing up, and so I knew I was counting down to the day where I got to meet my daughter. I got to stop being sick. I got to find out if she was okay and start the next journey of, you know, her recovery. So yeah, I guess I was a little bit nervous, not so much about having major abdominal surgery. That wasn't the scary part for me. It was more what was to come next. But as I say, I was also very excited and like, this baby's finally coming out of me. I'm not going to be pregnant. Yes.
And how did you come to meet her?
We had the screen separating us, me and, you know, the doctor, how they do that thing. I couldn't see anything. They pulled her out. I felt all the, you know, tugging and everything as you do. I was looking at my husband and he was all excited and with the thumbs up telling me everything's okay. And then they pulled her out and showed her to me very briefly. I got to sort of look at her and then they whisked her away for her own surgery. She was, I think, 3 hours old when she had surgery, but my husband, her dad, went with her. So I knew she was, you know, okay. He would keep me updated. He would message me or call me and let me know. But then, yeah, I was left alone in recovery. So it was a very brief moment. It wasn't until a few hours later that I got to meet her properly in the NICU. Yeah.
Mm. And what was that like?
Oh, that was incredible. Seeing her little tiny, even though she wasn't premature, she was still small. She was born 2.4 kilos. And she was itty bitty and she'd had her surgery, so she was sedated, and I didn't leave her side. I just sat there staring at her, and as soon as the nurses said I could, you know, touch her, I touched her, and yeah, it was great.
Did you feel emotional? Yes. Sort of holding her for the first time?
Yes. I didn't have any of those sorts of emotions until that point, so not when I actually gave birth to her. I didn't really feel anything. I was sort of a bit numb, I think. I didn't feel the hormones and the, you know, the chemicals and the rush and all those things that people talk about when you give birth. I didn't have any of that. I was just so worried about her. But when I finally got to see her, yeah, I felt really, really happy and overwhelmed and felt like a mum, and that was my little baby there. Yeah, it was great.
And how was the experience at NICU? Did you, after her surgery, how did that sort of go?
So her initial surgery was a success and everything went well, and they said that I had to express my milk and they would feed it to her via a nasal gastric tube, so through her nose, and then they would increase that slowly every day. And once she started tolerating that, then they could take the tube out and she could feed properly, and they estimated about 2 weeks of that. So I had in my head, right, 2 weeks we'll be home. And unfortunately she developed an infection in the hospital, a really bad one, golden staph, and she got really, really sick. And the doctors sort of took me and her dad aside and explained that she was on the strongest antibiotics And it was now, there was nothing the doctors could do. It was up to her to fight it. And if she was strong enough to fight it, she would survive. If not, she wouldn't. So that was hard. Yeah. But she was all swollen. Her face was huge. Her whole body was swollen. She was very sick. She had a nurse that was just for her, one-on-one. So our hospital admission was extended. We were there for 3.5 months. And I lived in the hospital. I didn't leave the hospital for 3.5 months. I expressed my milk around the clock and I slept there and I was with her all the time. But she fought the infection. She got better and, yeah, it was good. Her first year was great. She was a happy, healthy, wonderful, clever little baby, yeah.
And she's doing well today.
Mm, yeah. She's fine. Yeah, all good now. Oh, she's got no belly button. That's her only sort of thing. But otherwise, yeah, she's fine.
And so when you were discharged, I suppose, what did the doctors say to you about implications for future pregnancies? In particular, you know, are you a good candidate for VBAC if you feel pregnant again?
None of that was discussed. The only thing the doctors talked about was about Ruby needing to have checkups in future to make sure that her digestive system was working properly, her intestines and that she might have sore stomach and things. And everything was just about Ruby. We never mentioned my future possible births at all. VBAC was never mentioned to me. None of that was talked about. Only the fact that it's very unlikely that I would have another baby with gastroschisis because it's like a random thing that happens. It's not like a genetic thing or anything, but that's the only mention of future babies.
I want to now talk to us about Patrick's pregnancy. Did you give any thought to the birth after what had happened to Ruby? You've been through so much with her. When did you sort of think about future pregnancies and whether you'd like to give natural birth a go?
So Ruby's dad and I talked about wanting another baby quite soon after Ruby, and we wanted to have a baby soon after Ruby, but he and I ended up getting divorced, so that didn't happen. And so I was a single mum for a few years, and so I didn't think I'd ever have another baby again because, I don't know, I just didn't have a partner and I was in my 30s and I just thought maybe I won't have another baby. And then I met Andy, my partner now. We both, you know, he wanted to have more, I wanted to have more. He has a child from his ex-wife as well. So then I started getting excited and thinking, you know, that I might have another baby. But I was also really worried because I had read that women with hyperemesis gravidarum have a 90-something% chance of having it with every pregnancy. And I thought, oh no. And I did have it again. It was horrific again. And I lost a lot of weight again. I was hospitalized again. And it was the worst pregnancy in the world again.
I'm just wondering, because I have spoken to a few women with this condition. Yeah. And a few of them had said to me that that was their make or break for having another pregnancy. They just sort of thought that they didn't know they could put their body through another 9 months of this. Was that the case for you, or was it?
Andy wanted two children with me. And after I had hyperemesis gravidarum, I told him I'm never falling pregnant ever again. So I can't do that again, ever again. Two, I'm very happy with two. So yeah. I told him, and I think he didn't really understand until he saw me go through it. And then he went, oh my goodness, no, I couldn't go through this again. He said, like, it's awful for the partner as well. Yeah. I didn't eat for months. Like you can't, you just, I lost a lot of weight. It was just, you're just in hospital all the time on, you know, a drip because you're so dehydrated. And it's just, you can't do anything. You can't work. You can't drive because if you vomit when you drive, you crash. Like it's, you're in bed for months. It's awful. So that was my pregnancy with Paddy. But at the same time, all the ultrasounds were good. So I knew he was good. I knew he wasn't going to have what Ruby had. So it was a much happier pregnancy.
And were you planning for a VBAC from the beginning?
Yes, very much so. I booked into Calm Birth again. So the first time I booked into Calm Birth, I did it here in the mountains. I was given a full refund because I explained to her that I wouldn't be able to have a natural birth. And then I booked it in again this time. And this time I went and did the course and I was so excited about having a VBAC. I joined all the VBAC Facebook pages that exist and I spoke to lots of people. And I was very, very, very looking forward to it.
And was a water birth in your plan at this point in time?
Yes, I always wanted a water birth, but when I went to my antenatal checkups when I was pregnant at the hospital, every time I raised the subject, whether it was with a midwife or an obstetrician, they completely sort of, they shut it down and said hospital policy is no water births for VBACs. I asked why, and they said if something was to happen, and I said, what's going to happen? And they said, well, you know, if your uterus is to rupture, and I said, what's the chance of that happening? And they said, yes, but if, and if you're in the water, then it makes it really tricky to get you out and, you know, rush you into surgery. It's much easier if you're just not in the water. And it just sounded like a really, it didn't sound like a good reason to me. You know, I thought, well, what's the difference in, I don't know. I just, you know, so.
Did you seek out stories of women who'd had water births that were having
a baby? When they said that to me, I at first thought, that's it, I can't have a water birth, because they told me I can't. And it, for a short time, the plan was out the window. But then because of these VBAC Facebook groups, I would read everything that I could, you know, get my hands on. And I saw somebody had asked about water birth, and I read all the comments, and there seemed to be quite a few women in the UK that had said that the guidelines in the UK had changed. It used to be that they didn't recommend water birth, but they had changed it and said that it was okay, it was no riskier. And she actually had posted a link to the NICE, National Institute of Care Excellence. And so I quickly, you know, had a good look at it, and I read it. And it said, yeah, it said that, you know, research has been done, and it's no riskier. It's just as safe as for, you know, women having their first baby or whatever. And that it should be, if that's what the woman, the mother wants, then it should be supported. And so I held on to that. Yes. You know, I sort of, I printed it off and I highlighted it, and I carried it around
with
me.
It's actually funny that you say that. It's actually highlighted on our laptop right now.
Yeah.
So just for our listeners, because this was actually news to me. So when I was planning my VBAC, and I think Steph...
I didn't have this information.
Yeah, neither of us had this information at the, you know, at that time. So essentially it says management of the first and second stages of labor for women with a previous cesarean section, you know, to your point about water birth, but it also says do not routinely insert intravenous cannula for women in labor who have had a previous cesarean section, which is opposite to, I guess, the policy at our hospitals. So explain, you know, to women who've had a previous C-section that a vaginal birth is associated with a small chance of uterine rupture, and emergency cesarean may mean a higher chance of heavy bleeding. I can keep going on, but I think what we will do is definitely link this document in the show notes for anyone
that's interested. Yeah, I think it's definitely a good resource to have for anyone out there who's considering this in a public or private setting. We're just going to go back to your second pregnancy with Patty. You said that it was different. It was positive in a lot of ways. What else was sort of differentiated this pregnancy to your first? And was the support around you different, or...?
I don't think the support, I had a supportive partner both times, supportive family both times, supportive friends both times. The second time I was a bit more aware of things that existed out there. I had had friends that had had babies, I had done more reading, I had sort of, you know, I was a bit older and more aware of my body, and I could feel the changes in my body, like the pregnancy, you know, was hurting a bit more on my back, and I just felt, I don't know, a little bit different. And so I was 29 when I had Ruby and 35 when I had Patty. And so I decided that I really wanted to do something about my body, just because I was having a lot of back pain, and I started attending yoga, antenatal yoga classes. And that for me was amazing. I loved it. Yeah, very much.
I think we did it at the same place as
well. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Glenbrook? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yes. I really, really liked it a lot.
Did you do the active birth class?
I did.
As well?
That was brilliant. Yes. Uh-huh. I really, really enjoyed the active birth class. Yeah. Yep. So those two things, plus the calm birth, plus all the Facebook pages and the reading. I read two books. Oh, no, I'm not going to remember what they're called. Birthing with Confidence.
Yes.
And the Positive Birth book.
Yes.
Those two books, I read them, and I knew that my partner wouldn't read two full books because he just wouldn't. So
men don't generally read about birth.
But his ex-wife and he had had a baby, and she was born via cesarean, so he had also never experienced a natural birth, and I really wanted to prepare him, you know. So I took my books with me to Officeworks and I photocopied the pages that I thought were, you know, relevant, stapled them together and highlighted them. And when we went to bed one night, I handed them to him and I said, you need to read this. And he read it and he really enjoyed it. He said, oh, it was really, really good information. And especially the part about, it had a whole chapter about pain, about pathological pain, that where there's something wrong with us, you know, when we need medication, we need doctors, we need surgery, we need help, because it's not normal to feel that pain when we're sick or injured. And then there's the pain of childbirth, which is not pathological, which is completely, you know, it's our body doing what it's meant to do. And so I wanted him to read that page, and I think it gave a metaphor of running a marathon, and how the pain of running a marathon, but at the end, you know, you succeed. And so I wanted him to know that when he saw me having contractions, I didn't want him to panic or freak out, or, you know, I wanted him to remain calm. And yeah, just gave him lots of sort of affirmations, things he could say, and because I was really determined to not only have a VBAC, not only have a water birth, I also really wanted to have a medicated free, you know, like a natural birth as much as I could. And I knew that my pain threshold wasn't very high, so I was determined that my partner would read and know as much as I did about all the things that I could do. So he came with me to calm birth. He came with me to the positive birth,
Active birth class
at Glenbrook Yoga. And he read the books. So I guess, yeah, my partner this time was much more aware of things, whereas my first husband, he was actually really scared about the cesarean and everything. I don't think he had read a lot. Yeah. So this time I wanted him to be informed.
I think it's good for men to get involved, and it sounded like from your story he was really supportive. I think having that support mirrored in the room with you kind of helps you achieve the outcomes that you're after as well. But
it was really important for me that he knew what I knew. And so when I said to him, there might be a time where I might not be able to advocate for myself because I'll be in pain, you need to know everything I know. And so that's why he read all that, and he did. It was good. I'm jumping the gun a bit, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. And uterine rupture, were you ever concerned about the risks when the doctors told you, when you did your own research?
No, I think I saw how small it was, and the midwife that ran the calm birth course, she's an older woman, and she told me she had been a midwife for a very, very long time, a lot of experience. She's, you know, assisted so many births, and she has never ever seen a uterine rupture of, you know, so many VBACs that she's been a part of. And she said it's really rare. She said, I challenge you to say to any obstetrician or midwife, you know, how many uterine ruptures have you been a part of? She said, because I promise you, their number will either be zero or very, very low. She said it's not a common thing that happens. After hearing her say that it's rare, how rare it is, I thought, you know, surely if I was so unlucky the first time around, this time everything's going to go to plan.
So let's talk about Patty's birth. How did it all sort of start? Did you go into labor around your due date?
Or? He was born on his due date.
Wow.
Yep. He was born 40 plus zero. So when I was 39 plus 5 days pregnant, Friday night, and I just put my daughter to bed and had sat down to watch TV, and I started to get, oh, by the way, I had no idea what it felt like because I never went into labor the first time. So I started to feel what felt like to me like period pain, cramping in my back. And I said to my partner, I think this might be early, you know, stages of labor. And he was like, oh, you know, how exciting, sort of thing. And yeah. And then, and then he just went to sleep. And he just left me all by myself, and everybody was asleep. My daughter was asleep. He was asleep. The dog was asleep. I was just like awake, you know, feeling every now and then this sort of pain would just come, mild pain, nothing too bad. It just felt like period pain. And I thought, okay, maybe I should just sort of start timing it just to see if it is, you know. And yeah, they were actually like every 15 minutes. And I thought, oh my goodness, every 15 minutes, that's, you know, that's something. And I didn't sleep much that night. That was Friday night. Every time I sort of tried to fall asleep, I'd start feeling it again. And the only way I felt comfortable was if I stood up and walked around. So I started to sort of lean on the wall and started to remember all the things I learned in yoga, and in the active birth partner workshop thing. Yes. I always forget the name of it.
I think you said it right, and I might have said it wrong actually.
I don't know. They talked a lot about different positions, and I did that all night. And so in the morning, I was exhausted, but I was like really pumped, you know. I was like, okay, today's the day. And so I called my mum and I said, come and pick Ruby up. And she came and took Ruby. I said to my partner, can you make sure that everything's done? You know, the car seat is installed properly in the car. The hospital bag has everything in it. I gave him my little sort of list of things, and he checked everything. And then, we carried on at home. He and I did everything normally. We watched TV, we cooked, we cleaned, we ate, we chatted. We were sort of sitting around waiting, I guess. Nothing much was happening. It was still roughly every 15 minutes. It was still mild. And then in the evening, it started to ramp up. I could feel that it was a lot stronger. I could feel that they were closer together and that I was no longer able to sort of talk normally through them. And I said to him, okay, I think it's getting, you know, closer. I think we should call the hospital. And we called the hospital, and the midwife said to me, when you feel that you either are not comfortable at home anymore, when you feel that you want some help with pain relief, when you feel that you just want anything, you know, from us, when you no longer can handle it yourself, up to you, she said, just come in. And I said, okay. And I told my partner what she said, and he said, do you want to go now? And I sort of ummed and ahed, and I had just heard so many stories of people going in and then waiting a long time in hospital, and I didn't want to do that. And I said, oh, I think I can wait a little bit longer. And I just, I really made him sort of practice what we had learned, and he had to sort of massage my back and hold me, and I was, you know, concentrating on my breathing, and I did that for a couple more hours. And then it got to the point where I said, okay, no, now I need to go in. And it was about 9 p.m. My contractions had started about 9 p.m. Friday night. This was now Saturday night, so about 24 hours at home. We drove down to the hospital. We went in. I asked, even though I had done all this reading and stuff about not needing vaginal checks, you don't need to you know, I was just so curious. I was like, I wonder how, you know, anyway, even though I know that it doesn't mean anything, you know, you could still be a long time or a short time. I just wanted to know, you know. So as soon as we went in and I sort of got set up, I said to the midwife, could you, you know, please check? And she did. And she said I was 6 centimeters, and I was quite happy with that. And then the whole water birth thing. So I had instructed Andy to fill the bath. And I said, if they question you, you know, just do that. Don't worry.
up until this point, had you mentioned the NICE or NICE guidelines to any midwife that you had seen at the hospital?
No.
Okay. And did you have a birth plan?
Yes. Cool. Yes, I had typed up a birth plan. Awesome. And I brought it with me. I'd printed it out, and I had my—is it NICE or NICE? The NICE. I had printed that, and I had brought that in with me, prepared to, you know, sort of fight. But I said to Andy, I had told him at home that my plan was for him to fill the bath. I had read on Facebook some women say that sometimes they will take the plug away so that women can't use it because they don't want you to have a water birth or a VBAC. So I had gone and bought plugs in all different sizes, and I brought my own. God. Yeah. So I was like determined. And but they had the plug. They didn't take the plug away. But so my plan was to say, if they questioned it, I was going to say, look, I'm just going to use it as pain relief. I'm just going to get in for a little bit because my back's a bit sore. But, you know, I'll get out for the birth and then not get out. My plan was to not move, and they can't take you out. They're not allowed to.
So you were prepared for some resistance.
Yes, I was. Yeah. And I told Andy the plan, and he knew he had to do what he was told. So it was all – that was the plan. Anyway, the midwife walked in as Andy was filling the bath. And she said to me, oh, you know, you're having a VBAC, the hospital policy, blah, blah, blah. And so I pulled out my paper and told her that this is what I was doing. And she seemed very rattled. I think I could be completely wrong, but I think she was a little bit young and inexperienced, and she was a bit freaked out by what I was saying, which is fair enough. And so she sort of ran away and came back with a senior midwife who was the team leader on that night, on the shift. And her name was Elizabeth, and I love her. She was amazing. So she came in and sat down with me and said, "Do you have a birth plan?" And I gave her all my papers. And I said, "Yes, here, read it." And she went away and read it and came back and said, "I have read the NICE recommendation. I absolutely agree with it. Australia is behind the times. The UK is much more, you know, in the know." And she said, "I will support you 100% to have a water birth." She said, "Just so you know, the obstetrician on duty will be against it and they will want to come and have a chat to you." She said, "Do I have your permission to talk to them on your behalf?" And I said, "Please, yes." I didn't want to have to talk to an obstetrician about, you know. So she went and basically told them to stay out of the room.
Wow.
Yep. And they didn't come in. I didn't see an obstetrician until after Patrick was born.
How far apart were your contractions at this point when you were having these discussions with
I don't know. I don't remember.
It was hard active labor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. It was in the so you were, yeah,
advocating for yourself in this, yep, yeah, in this time.
Yep. Yeah. And she could see that it was a struggle for me, and that's why she said that she'll speak to the obstetrician, because she was wanting to take that away from me. I didn't, you know, have to do that, which was great, because, yeah, I broke down crying when she said that she would support me. I was thinking that I had to put up this big fight, and now knowing that the midwife team leader on duty was going to tell the obstetrician, you know, "Sorry mate, you're not allowed in here," basically, was amazing. And yeah, she stayed with me the whole time. I had two midwives, and she let me stay in the water the whole time. She asked me a few times if I wanted to hop out, and I said no, and she said that's fine. She used the handheld waterproof Doppler to check. She asked me to trust her, and she said, "If at any stage I think something's wrong with it, if the baby's in distress, will you hop out of the water?" And I promised her that I would if something was up. Everything went fine. His heartbeat stayed steady the whole time. And yeah, it was all going really, really well. I had put in my plan not to ask me for an epidural or anything, just to wait for me to ask. So I didn't ask, so she didn't offer anything. She did offer me the nitrous oxide, I think it's called, because I put in my birth plan. That's the only thing that I wanted her to offer me, and I used it and I really liked it. I thought it was great, but it made me throw up, so I straight away stopped and said I don't want to throw up. And she said, "It's fine, don't worry, like, we'll clean it up, you know." And I didn't want to vomit anymore. I'd thrown up enough. And so yeah, even though I actually found that it really did take the edge off a bit, and I enjoyed the feeling, I really didn't want to throw up, so I stopped using it. And yeah, I was quite happy in the water. I had my playlist that I had made, my little soundtrack for my birth music playing, and I had all my favorite songs on, and I was loving it. I was falling asleep in between contractions, like when I was having contractions, it was really painful, and I really had to just block everybody out of the room. I had to pretend like I was by myself, and I just breathed. All I could think about was my yoga breathing. But once the contractions were gone, I felt so relaxed in the water. I was like floating, and it was, I found it a really good experience until I felt the baby's head drop, and then I wanted to die. I didn't enjoy that part at all. Yes. And I said to Elizabeth, "Oh my goodness, what's going on?" Even though I knew exactly what was happening. Yeah. I just told her, no, this is not, you know, this is not right. And yeah, she said, "Okay, it's time, you know, you're gonna meet your son very soon." And I was like, "Oh no, I don't like this feeling." And yeah, I could feel his head starting to come out, and she was asking me to push, and I was trying, and I found it too painful, and I said, "Nah, I can't do this." And I sort of, I don't know what I thought. I thought I didn't have to get him out. I don't know. The pain was, yeah, it was unbearable. And then I was in my own little la-la land. And then I heard Elizabeth's voice, her voice, and it sounded different. It sounded serious. It sounded like, you know, she said my name, and she said, "I need you to listen, I need you to focus." And I sort of snapped out of wherever I was I had sort of drifted off to another, yeah. And I suddenly could hear her properly, and I was very aware of where I was. And she said to me, "Look, his head," because she could feel his head. She said, "He's been sort of going in and out for a while in the water, and you know, his neck and his head and blah, blah, blah." She described things to me. She said, "I think it's been quite a while. I have got no idea how long that went on for. It felt like an eternity. And she said, I think you really need to get his head out. She told me to take a big deep breath and push with all my might. And I did, and I got his head out, thank goodness. And then after that, it was fine. Then his body was fine, and it was all fine. But yeah, that part was for me not great. But then suddenly he was there in my arms, and the feeling that I had heard so much about, that I had not experienced at all with Ruby, all your hormones and that rush, and it just. I had that, you know, it's so strong. It was amazing. It was the happiest, most incredible, yeah, really beautiful feeling of giving birth to him, of holding him, of seeing him. Yeah.
Wow, that's, yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, well, I think that's true, that what you were talking about, it's that feeling when you have a VBAC that, oh, God, I haven't felt this rush of hormones in birth before. And you really feel that you miss that in your first birth, and it feels so... you just feel in a state of elation, like you're in a different world. You're on cloud nine because of this.
What was the sort of reaction from the hospital staff? Did people find out that were you famous? That's basically what I want to know. Did you hear about that lady that had a water birth VBAC?
I honestly have no idea. I don't know. No, I don't think so. It's just a few people on the Facebook VBAC group. I posted it on there, and a lot of women who had been told they couldn't have a water birth saw my story, and some had already had their baby and said, oh, I wish I'd heard your story earlier. Some hadn't, they were still pregnant, and I gave them hope that they could, I guess. So yeah, maybe famous in the Lower Blue Mountains Facebook page, but otherwise no.
Yes, I would say so, because I knew about you before.
And I just wanted to ask as well, how instrumental was Elizabeth, your midwife, in oh gosh, we've just got Andrea's beautiful baby boy.
Maybe I'll breastfeed him while I talk.
Patrick here, and he's going to come over just to join us for a minute. So we've got a guest appearance. But I was just going to say to you, it sounds like Elizabeth, the midwife there, she was really instrumental. Yeah, I mean, she provided a safe space for you to feel as though you were no longer on an uphill battle here. So you had a provider that was on the same page as you. And, yeah, do you think, I guess, as women, we're sort of talking about the importance of having that in hospital or elsewhere, having that support person that is really on your page and who you don't have to fight against, I think.
Even though I had done all that planning, you know, I'd bought all my little plugs to fit the bath, I'd explained to Andy what to do. even though I had all this plan to fight them and to get in and refuse to get out and blah, 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 I think if I hadn't had Elizabeth, if I had a big scary obstetrician come in and tell me that was hospital policy, because I was in labour and I was in pain and I was vulnerable, I think I would have just done what they had told me to do. I don't think I would have had it in me to fight. Yeah. So I'm so glad that I had Elizabeth there, because she, yeah, allowed me to have the birth I wanted.
So did you have any tearing or at all, or any complications with delivering your placenta, or was that all?
Yes, I tore a bit. It wasn't bad. The obstetrician came and stitched me up, and to be honest, while she was down there stitching me up, I was holding him and he was finding the breast, and I was in my own little land of, you know, baby bliss. So I hardly noticed what she was doing down there. I noticed the needle she put in to numb the area. I felt that, and then after that I had no idea. She said that it was a very small minor tear and it was quite easily fixed, and yeah, I was a bit oblivious to that. And same with the placenta. I felt it come out, but again, I had Patty to stare at, so I was I was pretty happy. Yeah.
Was your placenta delivered without the injection?
No, it was delivered with the injection. So okay. I had put in my birth plan that I wanted my placenta to come by itself, that I didn't want them to deliver it, but sorry, Patty's wanting a strawberry. The placenta, yes, I had put in my birth plan to not have the injection, to let it come out naturally, but I can't remember exactly what Elizabeth said. She came over and offered it to me, and to be honest, I was just so happy to have him in my arms that I just didn't really care about anything else. I was like, yeah, you do whatever you want. And plus, yeah, Elizabeth by now was, you know, my hero. So I just thought, you do what you want. Yeah.
And and your journey as mum of two coming home, how do you feel the birth experience contributed to how you felt parenting and going forward with two little ones? Two little ones.
Yeah.
How old was Ruby? We should have been six. Five, six. Yeah.
Look, I don't know what it would have been like to have, you know, what the experience would have been like with Ruby had she been also born vaginally. I can't know that. It's something that, you know. But Paddy is a very different baby. But he had a very different start to life. He slept so well from birth. Which I didn't even know was a thing. I didn't know babies slept like that. I had heard of babies sleeping well, but I always suspected it was because people left them to cry and did sleep training. Yeah, I didn't think it could happen naturally, but I didn't do anything with him. He just slept so well from birth. Ruby didn't sleep well. Ruby and I had a little bit of trouble breastfeeding, but it's because she was fed with a tube down her nose for the first 3.5 months. He took to the breast straight away from birth. He's never had any issues. He is a really content baby. In some ways, Ruby was more of a normal baby. She would cry when she was hungry or tired or things. Paddy, he whinges, but he doesn't really cry in the way that Ruby cried. He's a really happy baby. I've never had any issues with him. He's never sick. He's had a cold a couple of times, but I don't know. I just felt like I've had a much easier experience with him, and I could not possibly know that had anything to do with birth or not. It could be just two different babies, you know.
In terms of like your mental state when you come up from hospital and being able to tend to him and feel positive, I guess, about
so relaxed and confident and happy and not worried at all about, you know, anything about him. Ruby was such a tiny baby, not just at birth, but she was always small, always worried, you know, is she okay? Because every time I went for a checkup, she was in this little percentile in the blue book, and she was just so small all the time and always worried about, you know, is she getting enough? And, you know, and this guy is a little fatty boomba, and he's always he's always been fine at every checkup. They've always said, yep, he's perfect. And so, it's made me a lot more relaxed and confident and happy and, you know, not doubting myself and knowing that he's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think obviously the stress with what you went through with the first pregnancy with Ruby, you can't sort of, understate the impact of that on your, you know, on your headspace sort of. Regardless of the cesarean, I think that would probably put you under a lot of pressure and stress. Maybe it was calm birth as well.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, just a whole range of things, really.
What a birth, we don't know. A very rare, but
how do you think that hospitals could better facilitate this process for other women out there who are wanting to go for a VBAC? What sort of systems could they have in place, or what differences could there be to the system to allow this to happen for women to have a VBAC and a more positive experience?
The VBAC itself was always, without the water birth, just the VBAC was always supported in my journey. I was asked at every, you know, antenatal appointment, and they never pushed for a cesarean. They never, both the obstetrician and the midwives that I saw, they knew that my plan was for a VBAC, and they never sort of went on about uterine rupture and statistics, and they never pushed for a cesarean. So I felt very supported in having a VBAC. It was only when I mentioned the water birth that suddenly the uterus rupturing became an issue, and, you know, they started to, because they didn't want that. So I think they definitely need to change that. I think they need to have more education around the NICE guidelines in the UK, because Elizabeth knew about it, but I don't know if she knew about it as part of her normal midwife training, or if she had gone out and read because she's interested in, you know, herself. So it'd be great if all the midwives knew that, if all the obstetricians knew that, if Australia, I don't know what our equivalent to the NICE is here, but if Australia could sort of get with the times and and see that it's no riskier to have a water birth. And yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of things that need to be done to improve chances of women having a VBAC water birth. Yeah, without the water birth, I think I was very well supported in having a VBAC. It was never not encouraged.
Yeah, that's good. Lovely. Well, I think we're done. Do we have any more questions? Did you? Oh, I think it's time to go. I think Patty is Patty saying, yeah, we're done now. So yeah, we just wanted to thank you so much for your time and for trusting us in you know, sharing your truly inspirational story. We really do hope that, you know, the right people are listening to our podcast and can hear these stories. And you know, the UK is not too dissimilar to Australia. There's a lot of synergies there. So if they're doing it over in the UK, what's stopping us? Yeah, so thank you.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
Oh, look at him.
Got his cucumber. He's happy now.
Thank you for listening to this VBAC story. If you like the show, please subscribe and feel free to leave a review. If you would like to connect with us on social media, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for VBAC Birth Stories. If you have a question or you'd like to express interest in sharing your personal story, email us at vbacbirthstories@gmail.com. VBAC Birth Stories is a podcast where we share women's lived experiences. Please be advised that it's not intended to replace medical advice. If you have any concerns at all during your pregnancy, please always speak to your healthcare provider.